Blog Talk Radio.
People of the world, psychics that are being alive and direct, coming from Los Angeles, California, California. Oh my goodness, people, today's show, it's been a while. Try to make this happen for some time. Been working on this for about a year. I had to talk to their reps, their agents, their managers, CAAIC, all these people. Had to talk to make, you know, do some connections here and there. I finally got Shawnee and Chanel Gibbs on air. People, I'm telling you, I've waited a long time for this. So let's see if I got them there. I want to give them the proper introductions. I'm going to bring them on. I have them over there. They're probably on some movie set doing Avatar 2 or something like that. Don't worry about the sirens in the background. You know, people on Chase or anything like that. People, the Gibbs sisters, award-winning team with credits in writing, producing, and animation. The Twin Sisters have created projects that have entertained audiences across the globe. Creators of the award-winning animated show Ravishing Raspberry, the popular online animated series adopted by Aliens, Old Ladies Driving, and Diva Smackdown. Oh, I like that one. I like the wrestling show. Diva Smackdown. I like that one. They're also USC guys, Hanks and Marvin Miller Story Writers Fellowship alumni. That is not an easy program to get into. The Gibbs sisters are members of the Writers Guild of America West, the Academy of Television Arts and Sciences, and the Organization of Black Screenwriters, OBS. People, check them out. Great organization. They've been writing for Bravo, Step It Up, and Dance. And their individual work includes producing for Emmy Award-winning series Top Chef, Project Runway, contributions to Disney's Emmy-winning sitcom W. I can't say anything more because we might be here for another hour. Hold on for 1 second so I can get them on here. Ladies of the world, Shawnee and Chanel, what it is.
Hello,
live from the Staples Center.
Oh, you at the Staples? Let me get my sneakers on and bring my microphone. We could do like an on location. Ladies, what is going? It has been a long time to get this moment to happen.
We're glad to be here. Yes. Thank you, Saeed. Yes.
Man, what y'all doing? How's everything? First off, let's take care of some personal business here. How was Comic-Con? Y'all make your way down that way or what?
Oh, yeah. We did. It was pretty amazing. I mean, we did a compact version, so we just were there for like Saturday, like all Saturday, and then we turned around and came back to LA. But it was pretty amazing.
For those people that don't go ahead, ladies, talk to us.
Oh yeah, so we had a super super packed schedule of just getting in, getting out. You know, sometimes you can get sort of overwhelmed by what goes on. Saeed, you've been there for a number of years, so you understand. But we were able to maneuver, you know, and it was really pretty an incredible one day of Comic-Con.
Whirlwind experience.
What is it about the show, for those out there, because everybody is like, I hate saying it, but they're kind of Comic-Con come lately. They're coming for the first year this year because they're seeing it, like they hear it talked about. But for those that have never really been there, how would you describe it for, we call them the virgins of the show, how would you describe Comic-Con for the first timer that wants to go to that show? How would you put it out there?
I think now it's so massive, like it's so big. There's like so many companies, so many celebrities, which I think it's great because it's bringing, the big spectacle of entertainment to the Comic-Con arena. But I think it's a way for you, if you're interested in any aspect of comics or some sort of entertainment, you can go there and physically see, like, some of your favorite comic creators. You can meet with them. Sometimes, like, if you're going to some of the smaller events or panels, you can talk with them one-on-one. You can interact with people that may have similar interests. I mean, I think it's a really awesome time, and especially, like, if you really plot your schedule out, because otherwise you'd be roaming, like, all over the place, like, whoa, there's so much to see and do. But if you really, like, you know, take some time, plot your schedule out, and say, I'm going to see this, it can be an amazing experience. You can meet some awesome people. You can collaborate with, meet people that you may eventually collaborate with, other writers, other artists. I mean, I think it's a really good convention to meet people.
Like you two ladies. Yeah, that's about right. And I haven't figured out how this happens, but an extravaganza like that, that's about 100,000 plus people, somehow the three of us somehow bump into each other in some escalator somewhere.
Wait a minute. Hold on. Oh, the other thing. You see so many people you know. That's the crazy. Like, you just be walking out, oh, my God, it's so-and-so, so-and-so. And you just run into people that you know. It's crazy.
Now, the artist that we're concerned about today, Comic-Con, is their nice little group in San Diego. They have the great people there. But we have you too. And you know, I've been waiting to get you all. I've tried to send money, donations, made some calls to President Obama. Hey, look, could you get me some information through NSA? Snowden must have their information. We have you here today. Listen, I already gave your introduction. Why don't you both tell us about your background? And you know, we don't edit here. This is live. You know how we get down. So say what it is and say how you want. What is your background, like, ladies?
Our background, well, we work in post-production and television. Those are our day jobs. And then we're writers, we're screenwriters. Now we can add comic book writers to the equation.
Yes.
We're also artists. We've directed some projects. We've directed some shorts in the past. And we're just, we're writers, entertainers somewhat. directors, you know, we're artists. And we're storytellers at the heart of everything. So, however you can tell the story, whichever way, you know, whichever different genres or tools that you can use to tell stories, we probably use them. Or we're in the process of, you know, finding a way to use it. So, but yeah, ever since we were young, we just, you know, in any way that we could tell stories through either words or art or song sometimes. You know, it just came out. So I definitely believe that if anybody, you know, in our family was sort of geared towards the arts and the creative arts, it was us. So, yeah, that's how we, you know, so we've always, like, found our lane. We've always found our voice through, you know, through everything, and that's how we've been making our living and just being passionate about what we do.
Yeah, our mom was an artist, and she just allowed us to run wild. She taught us how to draw, and I think that probably was, like, that opened up so much for us, you know. And then, like, in elementary school and stuff, we would always find a way to tell stories through our art. We would collaborate on, like, projects and win, like, art awards, and we were like, oh, actually, we can get some people actually respond to this. We can get, like, ribbons and stars. This is pretty cool, you know? So I think just getting, I guess, getting that acknowledgement in school that, you know, writing and arts was something that, you know, teachers and your fellow students appreciated. Like, oh, draw me a picture of a car, and you'll draw a picture. And they're like, wow, and everybody's like, whoa. And you're like, oh, okay, cool. This is, I like it. So, I think just being supported, it's one thing to just be supported in what you're doing and when you're young, you know. And so from there, we just kept going, just, you know, writing and creating artworks and, as Chanel said, writing songs. And just however we felt at the moment, we just, you know, we did it. And I think that stayed with us. And I'm glad that we had that experience in our youth, you know.
You ladies, it's interesting because I'm going to come back to the support aspect, but there's something that always stood out about you both, which always fascinated me because you know the artist mentality of struggling just doing one arena. You ladies do film, comics, and animation. Now, how first you have your production company. Tell us about Real Republic. Tell us about that, and then explain how is it. How do you balance doing films? I mean, some people struggle just with films. You know how that world is, and you know how comic books are. And we won't get into animation. And you were doing animation before people understood how animation can get down. How is it that you two are doing three different genres, three different arenas? How's that work? Tell us. Talk about it.
Shanae, did you want to take the question? It just continues to evolve, honestly. Mm-hmm. I mean, and it's always been a process of, you know, experimentation is how it started. And that was, I think, through like a digital media course that probably one or maybe both of us took. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we started off, it was either writing or drawing to tell stories or doing both. I don't know if you remember in like kindergarten or first grade where you get that old sort of like newspaper, recycled paper with a big line on it, and then there'd be a place for you to mm-hmm. draw a picture and then also tell the story below.
Mm-hmm.
That like really like summed up how it all got started. And so eventually, like as we started getting into, you know, as digital media started really, you know, becoming accessible, you know, mm-hmm. for young people and just people in general, that's how we just started experimenting with Photoshop and other tools that were available at the time. I believe in the beginning there was like Poser, you know, mm-hmm. And then we were using our own illustrations just to create movement with animation before there were any programs available. Mm-hmm. We were just tinkering around. So and people would be like, oh, could you, you know, show this? Or, you know, we were painting at the time. I think I was doing oil or acrylic painting, and Shanae, you were doing... what medium were you? Like pastels and things. So we were always, you know, looking for ways to combine both video and our storytelling, just make movement and to tell mm-hmm. stories in different ways, you know. That mm-hmm. was back when I think we were using like Adobe Premiere, before Adobe Premiere came back into the fold after Final Cut sort of went down, like in the very like early days. We were, you know, and people were just fascinated, like, oh my God, how are you guys doing that? And then we would show things in like, you know, different showcases, or somebody would start requesting things. And we actually back in the day while we were in college, we worked for a cable company back in the Bay Area. There was a cable channel called African Eye, where we really got to go wild. I mean, he was our sort of our mentor and also our boss by the name of Art France. I was just talking about him earlier this morning. Unfortunately, he passed away a couple of years ago, but he taught us, you know, so much about deadlines and creating news, you know. It's sort of a newsy sort of thing as well, you know, so we were doing news, we were covering current events, we were covering arts and culture, and we were, you know, airing like every week. So we really had to be, you know, on deadline. We were doing this with a couple of our friends from San Francisco State, Kevin V. Johnson Jr. and a filmmaker here in Los Angeles named John Mazik, who's now doing music videos and things. But we were doing a lot of those sorts of things, and then we started creating, like, you know, animated interstitials for the show. Mm-hmm. You know, so we had to also be pretty quick. So it'll be like, you know, is that going to be ready for the Sunday broadcast?
And so, we would stay up all night all morning working to, like, get those animated interstitials ready for the show that we had to have done that day. So, I mean, it was crazy, but I think it prepared us for what we're facing now. Sorry to cut you off, Chanel.
No, that's okay. I think I forget even what the software was that we were using, but that's, we created, we used After Effects to create a little short called the Afro Puff Girls based on what was currently a big hit on, was it Nickelodeon or Cartoon Network? Powerpuff Girls. And so, you know, that actually people would, you know, people were really excited and like, I don't know if they were calling or emailing, but there were lots of, you know, people actually wanted to get copies of Apple Puff Girls and things like that. So we knew that it was something that that could reach people and actually get them excited about the program. People would be talking to us about seeing the Apple Puff Girls on television as we told them that we were working for African Eye. So it was, you know, we didn't even really know that people were necessarily watching the show.
We thought it was just
watching the
mom.
Show. Yeah, exactly. But then as things started, you know, progressing, you know, we started hearing back that people were liking what they were seeing and actually tuning in for the programming. So that was really great. I mean, it was a great start, and I'm really grateful and honored that we got to work with Art France and be mentored by him during that time in college.
This is that actually is a good lead-in to this question from one of our people in the chat. Folks, you want to get down, come to the chat. I block the chat so you don't see each other because some of y'all will say the wrong word and y'all start arguing back and forth and I have to, like, start dropping some people. So if I see you, I see you. Don't reach out to no one else and start calling people by name. But I have a question here from a gentleman here from Brazil. We're international, so his English is a little struggling. But his question was, he says, how important – let me see if I can read this here. You mentioned your mom encouraging you with your art, and you just mentioned mentoring. How important is that encouragement and mentoring for creative people like yourself? Or like myself, that's what he's saying. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah. I think it's very important. I think it's important to nurture talent that you see in anybody that's around you, any young person. I mean, it could be, I mean, with our mom, it was our mom, but if there's if there's some youth or a child that you see or know and you see some potential in, I mean, I just think nurturing whatever that natural instinct is that child possesses is, I think it's the best thing for growth. Because I think, I mean, kids, like, before they even learn to say, like, what their parents want them to be, you know, some people, like, are like, my mom wants me to be a doctor, but I really want to be a ballerina. You know, like, whatever that now, I mean, I think, because I think everybody, all of us have something. You may be good at architecture. You may be good at, I don't know, fixing cars, or you're into boys who are into trains, or, you know, like, whatever you see, whatever that child is expressing, something that is innate, I think it's something to consider nurturing, you know. And I think it's important. It's important for human growth. It's important for creative growth. It's just important in general. And when you get that support, I mean, when you feel comfortable, like, being who you, like, naturally are, I mean, I think that's the best thing for you is when you get into adulthood. So I'm just glad that our mom supported us, our family supported us, and my mom, you know, never, I mean, whatever we came home and said we wanted to do, she just supported us. I mean, we weren't getting into trouble, we were doing art stuff, you know, and she was just like, yeah, you know, you guys want to do television? Do it. You know, you want to do art? Do it. You know, as long as you're doing what it is that you love to do, that's great. And I mean, even though, you know, there were times when we originally came to LA a few years back, you know, we came with no job prospects. I mean, we were working in the Bay Area teaching media to youth. I think Chanel was at a museum and technology center in San Francisco called ZIM, and I was working at a program called Youth Sounds in Oakland. We were both working with multimedia and youth. And then we decided to make the leap to come to L.A. after a couple of years of graduating from San Francisco State University. We majored in cinema and came down no prospects, a little bit of savings.
Wow.
I mean, we probably had 1 month total, you know, like 1 month of savings. Just like, we're going to do it, and if we can make it, let's try. And we came down, and my mom supported it. I knew she was probably like, oh, my God, what are these kids doing? But we came down and we landed on our feet and we found work. I mean, there was no other way. We were just like, this is what we want to do. So we made it happen, and that's where we both, I think, Chanel started working with a music company, and then somehow, no, I think I started working
in education, and then we both transitioned into jobs in television, just through networking and meeting people and telling people what we were interested in doing and, you know, making connections, which is what, you know, Los Angeles is all about.
Right.
And, yeah, that's how we first started here in L.A.
L.A. I have a, you know, this is very interesting because I have a question here from what's her name here? Sarah in Texas. All right, Sarah, I'm going to give you a shout-out. Texas, what's going on? She wants to know.
The people in Texas.
Oh, anybody you want to say hello to out there while we're on there?
Well, all the people in Marshall.
And
in Dallas.
We can go all the way around, right?
Oh, yeah.
She wants to know, she's ironically, she's been following you since Adopted by Aliens, and she wants to know, we didn't get there, but she wants to know now, she wants to know how Adopted by Aliens came about.
Oh, jeez.
she has a follow-up.
Yeah,
she's been waiting forever.
Bye.
Go ahead.
During the time, that was when we were doing a lot of work with youth, and we were both either, you know, in Oakland or just all over the East Bay. And I think what we noticed was going on with a lot of the kids there, especially because we were working with at-risk youth, is that a lot of children didn't, you know, they didn't have the traditional family, you know. Mm-hmm. So even if you went back to when we were growing up, there was the Cosbys that were on television, and they, you know, they didn't have that sort of reflection at home. You know, some kids were being raised by their grandmother or, you know, some extended family member, or sometimes they were, you know, in foster homes. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of what brought Adopted by Aliens into being, you know, just thinking of a young girl who actually the main character, Whitney Ward, was a ward of the court. You know, she was in a foster home. And it was just a little, you know, reaching out to kids who might not have felt, you know, that support network, or might not have had, you know, some of the stuff that we had growing up, but that love was out there. And family was out there, and it didn't have to look like the traditional family. And, you know, your relatives probably didn't even have to come from Earth to you know, for you to find a home and to feel love and all and that sort of thing, and to find your voice and to find yourself. So that was we didn't have a traditional background either, but I believe, you know, in Whitney Ward, there was a little bit of us, and, I mean, in all of our characters, there's always a little bit of us, and I just loved the concept, and it was another scenario where, you know, we worked, I think it ended up being just a 12-minute short, but we were working full-time. We were also here in Los Angeles, you know, doing our jobs, and we would come home really just get into it, really be passionate about it, just share our work back and forth, and, you know, we can tinker here and there and, like, really excite each other by the scenes that we were producing. And, you know, eventually we finished the short, which is what is now Adopted by Aliens. And we didn't expect for people to react, you know, as they did, but they did, and people still talk about it, and they're wanting to know, when is it going to be on Nickelodeon? But, you know, it's a process. I mean, we actually had a meeting just based on having Adopted by Aliens. We were able to go into Nickelodeon and talk with some development people and do all that sort of thing. So it really opened doors for us, and it's a project that we will continue to champion for and keep, you know, additional ideas for, even though we've, you know, moved forward with some of the other projects. But she's our baby, Whitney, and Adopted by Aliens World, and we'd love to see her on TV or the big screen pretty soon. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, we like it a lot. We still really like it. Shanae was just watching it a couple of, like, last 2 weeks ago or something like
that.
And, you know, we could still chuckle and, you know, still love it. So
yeah, I was just remembering that. I mean, the thing about Adopted by Aliens too was that It was only Chanel and I working on it. I mean, outside of like some of the vocal talent that we hired, Lynesha Kate Lee, who was just awesome as Whitney, and just going to record the sound, it was Chanel and I like creating all of that stuff. And I just think, wow. I mean, when I look back, I'm like, oh, how did we even get it finished? You know, because we were like working full time and all that stuff. But that was just us learning
and
all the ropes of like animation, just doing it all ourselves, which helped us later to do stuff like Sule and some of the other projects that we're working on now. Chanel?
We moved into Flash actually. I remember. Before that, we were only using After Effects. Like, we did this, our first project was called Ravishing Raspberry, and that was in After Effects. So, and that was just, like, a combination of our artwork and, like, collage sort of work mixed with video as well. So, yeah, that was, like, our first Flash project, too.
Now, when you have these projects, she's saying thank you so much, and she's waiting for the movie. So, hey, Sarah, if you want to talk option, I think we can work something out. But my temper's set. I want to. This is actually a lead into something else, because with all these, we're going to talk about. Well, you know, we're going to talk about Fashion Forward. You know, we're going to bring that into the mix. But before we get there, what was the inception of Real Republic? Your production company. I call it the studio because it looks like a studio. How did Real Republic come together?
I think it came as we were working on Ravishing Raspberry. I think we were fresh out of college.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, just out of college, and we wanted to start our own production leg up in the Bay Area, and so that's how Real Republic got started. You'll see, I mean, like when you look at the Real Republic logo, there's like a woman, and her hair is made of film, and she's standing in front of a flag. That's like the Republic flag. But it's really, we just wanted a strong production company that had an independent spirit and an independent focus, and we really wanted to do unconventional films and tell unconventional stories, and we wanted just the name and the logo to just be synonymous with that independent spirit that we wanted to have, and so... that's where Real Republic came from, and we're still, it's still at our heart, and telling stories that haven't been told is totally still what we love to do, and that's how it originated, though, when we were fresh out of college.
You're coming from, this is something that I heard George Lucas talk about some time ago when he was down here, wanted to go back to the Bay Area. The sense of creativity is a lot different in the Bay. And I've noticed, and just talk with you face to face, it's you come to me. You're just so you both are so humble and so grounded. At a place like Comic Con or at WonderCon or wherever we met, where people are running around all frantic trying to hustle, it seems like you guys just walk in. Maybe you hide it well. I don't know, but you seem to be very grounded about the experience going around you. And I was kind of curious, is there a different vibe in the Bay Area versus L.A. when it comes to the creative spirit, the creative vibe, or collaborative? Because you two work so well in so many different genres. I wanted to ask that question.
I think that the spirit is definitely different in the Bay Area. And even like when we went to film school at San Francisco State, the teachers and everybody, I think, the spirit was independent. Tell those kind of stories you want to tell, do it the way you want to do it. But then I think later, as we were leaving, that there was somebody came into the cinema department, and he said, you know, what you guys are doing, what this independent stuff is not going to pay your bills. Like,
wow.
You guys are out doing, making the kind of movies you want to make, but you're going to be out basically, you know, waiting tables somewhere when you graduate with that degree. And so what I want to do is restructure this whole thing so that, you know, you guys specialize, and when you come out of here, you'll have a degree that means something. And,
wow.
You know, that's what it is. But, I mean, there is a difference in independent film and whether or not you want to, like, specialize and come into L.A. and, you know that you're doing sound or know that you're going to be a DP and have these camera skills. I mean, I think there's something to be said for both. I think it's the independent spirit is, like, just something that's just native to the Bay Area, just with the whole, you know, Berkeley's there, the whole hippie free love movement, I think, kind of originated in the Bay Area in the 60s. And I think there's just
the
a
Black
natural...
Black Panther started there.
The Black Panther Party came out of the Oakland. I mean, it's a place where there's just free thought. People are allowed to be who they want to be, express themselves how they want to express. And I think that's something special, I think, about the Bay Area. I think here in L.A., when people move to L.A., I think people are so driven to, quote, make it, you know? And I mean, I think, and make it means, you know, sometimes making it means paying your bills and, you know, working in the field that you went to school for. I mean, so I think the drive, like the, people are more intense about trying to do it in a time span that they feel that they need to do it in. And so I think the people are just more driven here to have some measure of success. Where in the Bay Area, I think people are more like, I'm just doing what I love to do. You know, I'm an artist and I display at the galleries or I show my films when I want to show them. I don't think the pressure is as intense as it is here, you know.
The other part about it is that there's so many voices, you know, there's so many, you know, as we both know and probably, you know, we all know as far as like the note process. And, you know, you started off thinking of a film that you intended to make. But, you know, once you get notes back from the executives and once you get notes back from the studio and, you know, notes and everybody's got a hand in the process, it's no longer, you know, the project that you originally set out to make. So it is a little different. It's not an independent process, you know, once you get here and you get into the system, you know, into the fold of the system. Sometimes it changes things for the better, and then sometimes it doesn't. But I mean, you know, that's one of the realities when you get here too. It's like, oh, wait a minute, I thought I was coming here to to make a, you know, to make just a bigger version, a more well-funded version of what it was that I set out to do. And it's like, oh, wait a minute, no, you have to jump through a few more hoops or, you know, hear from a few more people. But yes, it's different, but, you know, there's so much more opportunity here. I mean, it's been pretty good to us so far.
Well, the things you've been doing, again, it's I didn't realize it until a couple of days ago when I was putting together the show. So, you know, we talk about what we talk about. So it's like, okay, we talk about, you know, life and things like that. But when I sat back and said they're doing film, animation, and comics, man. I don't know what else more to say beyond that. But when we talk about the comics, there was that awesome publication that you put in my greedy little fingers called Fashion Forward. And people with Shawnee and Chanel Gibbs today, we're on the street, reach out to them. Give some love. You can find. Is there a way they can contact you before we continue? Is there a way they can contact you or listeners can reach out to you? Is there any information, email or something like that?
Yeah, if you go to realrepublic.com, which is real as in film, real, R-E-E-L, republic.com, you can find our contact information there. Also, if you go to the current project, which is gofashionforward.com, you can find contact information for us there as well. We also have Twitter and Facebook.
Ooh, I have to find you on Facebook.
We're not hard to find. I mean, you might not find any personal pages, but we're not hard to find if you're looking to get in contact with us.
There you have it.
Do you want to give out your phone number?
Yeah, I hear some pens coming out. Go ahead. Now you talk about go fashion.
I take that
forward.
As a no.
Yeah, I know the tense silence in the air. Now, question: we have the go fashion forward. That book, I mean, I've seen that book is just a step above. How did that project come together? How did that book come together? And what do you want to do with it?
Let's see. We were in the the Cosby Writing Fellowship, the Marvin Miller and Guy Hanks writing program at USC.
Mm-hmm.
And we were working on it was the script that we worked on while we were in that program, and we knew that we wanted to take it and make it something visual. And so we came up with the idea of making that that script a comic book.
Mm-hmm.
And Fashion Forward, we described it as Back to the Future meets Devil Wears Prada.
Mm.
it's a time travel story set in the world of New York high fashion. And so it's fun. I mean, like, we just tell stories. I mean, on the most basic level, we, like, tell stories to entertain ourselves first and, like, make ourselves laugh and, you know, like, we like adventure-driven stuff and comedy-driven stuff. And when we talked about it, we were just laughing and as we were coming up with concepts and storylines, we were just having a ball. And, I mean, just working on the comic is just, it's so fun and it's freeing, you know, and whatever we can imagine in our minds, we can put on the panel in the comic book. And we were working with a fantastic artist, Linda Chung, who's from Southern California, but
mm-hmm.
she's currently up in the Bay Area.
Mm-hmm.
But she's an amazing, amazing artist, and we've just been collaborating. Currently, we have one book out, published, and then a second book on the way. And it's just awesome. Chanel, do you have anything you want to add to that? I know she does.
I don't know. It's been a great undertake. You know, it's been a great time out for us to do this and to further working in the arts or finding ways to tell stories visually and to collaborate with an artist to do it. I mean, we did that with Sule in the case of the Tiny Spark, too.
Mm-hmm.
We worked with several artists and animators to get that going, but in a way that's, you know, completely new. We've been doing it with Fashion Forward, and we like it a lot. We like the response that we've been getting. We were down there at Comic-Con the last week or so. What was that, 2 weeks ago?
Mm-hmm.
It feels like, wow, that was, man, it feels like yesterday. But we were there, you know, as we were down there, we were interacting with young girls and young ladies and people who would be interested in the comics. And I remember handing, you know, one of our postcards, which has the second book we were promoting,
mm-hmm.
the image for that on one of the postcards or promotionals. And I had a young lady that says, hey, I'm already reading this.
Wow.
You know? So, yeah. So, I mean, it's definitely getting out there. And, you know, we're really excited about the possibilities and what's to come for Fashion Forward, the book and the brand in general. So it's we're super excited about it.
And
really, really, really excited about it. We got some good press on it, too, some good write-ups and things. Girls
and
Reading Comics gave us a good review.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, it's really good. So, yeah, we're really excited. I'm very pleased and very happy.
No, go ahead. Continue on.
Oh, yeah, we're really excited and pleased and happy with how things are turning out for it. And through our publishing arm, which is Bopsy Books, We're looking to do more projects also, you know, in the future. More graphic novels, even maybe just some traditional novels as well. So everything is, you know, coming together. we're super excited about it.
Tell me something. The website, can you share the website first before going to the next component here? What's the website for Fashion Forward?
Oh, yeah. It's gofashionforward.com.
Mm-hmm. The book, people. I'm telling you, when I looked at it, I said, my God, okay, what booth are you set up at so we can send some people over? You gave out the card. This stuck in my mind. You gave out the promotional card to a young lady, and she says she's reading already. Was that
mm-hmm.
feeling similar to when you found out that there were actually people watching the animated program you were working on years back? Was the feeling kind of the same? Like, wait, my God, someone's actually reading this stuff?
Yeah, it really was. And, I mean, you know, when people, let's say, you know, because as we, when before we even came to Los Angeles, we were in the Bay Area, in Oakland, thinking that we would just stay up there, you know, just thinking, hey, you know, we're just going to be here. We're going to make, you know, this our publishing, you know, our production home, you know,
mm-hmm.
in Oakland. We'll do some stuff here. And we started there. Eventually, with Ravishing Raspberry, which was our first film, that ended up going a lot of places that we just didn't even realize it would go. And it also ended up on BETJ. Somebody had gotten in contact with us about it, you know, showing it on, you know. So, I mean, that's the other thing. I mean, and I guess when you talk about, you know, the humbleness or things like that, we never try to go in with the intention of like, oh, my God, we're going to tell this thing and it's just going to, you know, get to all these people. We go in, this is an interesting story. Is it making us laugh or, you know, is this interesting to us? Or, you know, we just go in it as far as, like, just the process of writing a story that we think is interesting or just, you know, cracking ourselves up, you know, in some form or another. And then, you know, as the process starts unfolding and developing, it becomes something a little longer, a little more than we even expected it. And then once it goes out into the world, you just never know. So sometimes we'll meet somebody at a networking event or just, you know, at somebody's party or what have you, and they've seen the work. Like, I think I was at the Scandal. Oh, that's what, Scandal with Kerry Washington. There was a premiere of the finale. And I was just there with a friend of mine for just to hear them. They were doing the final table read the night of the finale. So it was like all the actors and Shonda Grimes was there and all these things. And so at the end of it, there was a woman who was a member of the DGA who remembered me from like way, like almost 10 years ago now. Before we came to Los Angeles, when we showed through Be Her, which, you know, Be Her is the Black Hollywood and Education Resource Center, when we were yearlings with Ravish and Raspberry. And she's like, oh, yeah, I remember you. You have, I mean, another thing is, you know, people remember twin, like two people who look alike, I suppose, walking around too. But she remembered the film, and she's like, I remember you seeing you and your sister. So a lot of people, like, that was our Los Angeles debut, and a lot of people have never you know, forgotten the work, I guess, also because it was animation and it was a little different. And and it was a really, you know, it was really fun. I mean, and that film went to, like, several different places with totally different audiences. And just to see people laughing and enjoying it and having a good time with the short was just, like, way beyond what we ever expected, you know. So it's just pretty cool just how you could be somewhere and somebody will remember your work. And that's, you know, really gratifying, you know.
Share
so
with
it
us.
It just makes, yeah, it just, it makes your heart swell.
I can see the smile from here.
I had a heart swelling moment there in Comic-Con. I was like, oh.
do you remember her name by any chance?
No, but I remember that she had traveled to San Diego from San Francisco.
Wow.
It was, she had to be like young college age or something. Nobody I ever knew or anything like that, but she was checking out that she's been reading, and that's really great.
Oh. Well, our young fan, our college fan that she had met at Comic-Con, you're getting a shout-out. Your name's not known, but you're getting the love, so hope we're bringing a smile to your face up there. So let's go to another question.
Swelling.
I can see the smile from here. I can literally see the smile on both of you ladies' face because you guys share with some people. We have a few minutes left here, and I want to get into your success and triumph and things like that. But what is the collaborative process between with you two? When I write, it's me. I don't write with anybody. It doesn't work. I've tried. It doesn't work. So you two, it seems that your voice, it comes together, but it can still be different in different genres. What is the collaborative process with you two?
For us, talking the story out in advance and then outlining a structure is it's like essential because sometimes I mean, there have been times, like, early on where we tried to write where both of us were sitting at the keyboard, and that can just get
was disastrous.
Messy. Yeah, it was a disaster. Like, it just was a disaster. I mean, we got to a few things on the page, and then, you know, things just fell apart. But then we started, like, really sticking to our outlines, and then, so, like, Chanel may take one scene or one beat, and then, like, I'll write the next scene, and then, you know, like, since we know where we're going, it's easier for us to, like, work individually and then come back together and work that way. So I would say, like, talking it all out, talking the story idea out, like, one of us may have an idea, and we'll be like, oh, like, Chanel, I think Chanel has the idea for Fashion Forward. But she was like, boots and, you know, time travel. And we were laughing. And then from there, we would just start fleshing it all out. And then we would outline. And then one person takes one scene, we take the next. And then we just collaborate that way. But I think, our strengths, I think sometimes, like, I'm good with the technical stuff. Chanel can get really flowery and wordy with her descriptions. It's always fun to read. And then, like, when I'm making her laugh, you know, I know that I've done a good job, you know, and the same thing as, well, I'll be like, what are you laughing at? Which line makes you laugh or whatever? And then just make a mental note, like, aha, I got to chuckle. So it's just that sort of a thing. Like, we do write to, like, make to make ourselves laugh and to, like, have a good time that way. Because if she's laughing, then I know, like, somebody else, at least somebody like us or say anybody, you know, would just chuckle there, too. So, you know, you're doing your job when you get a laugh or you get some kind of reaction. So, I mean, it's a fun collaborative process. Yeah, and it works well for us.
Yeah, the other part of the process is just we'll hand off our pages to each other, too, to punch things up or to, you know, to punch up jokes or to, is this going in the right direction or those sorts of things. It's just good to have another pair of eyes for especially jokes because a lot of our work, we work in comedy. So it's
comedy.
Really good. It's fun. Yeah, or we try.
More power.
That's the other thing. You think you're
ahead.
Writing comedy, and then
it turns out you were writing a tragedy.
Right. It turns out somebody's like, this is not funny. was this supposed to be funny?
Oh, my God. Let's share with people out there, because we have a lot of people listening. I don't want to tell you how many, because you might get a little nervous, but it's a lot. One of the questions, you've shared a lot of your successes. What challenges or difficulties do you want to share with the people you've experienced in this journey of creation? That could be like advice to the fellow creators out there in the internet world.
Yeah, for sure. Sometimes, I mean, because we were artists or we were always looking for artists or other people to collaborate with sometimes, especially with the new graphic novels that we've been working on. And sometimes it's hard to, you have to really be discerning about who it is that you choose to work with, who it is that you choose to collaborate with. And we like to use contracts a lot just to make sure that because it's easy to get into, you know, where you thought you were doing, well, you thought you were doing one thing and somebody else signed on for something else. And then you don't find out until, you know, until it's too late that you guys had two different intentions or, you know, those sorts of things. So we had one project just completely stall, you know. Because I know. And so that's really tough, especially when you've, like, put time and money into it. And then I'll tell you, you know, offline a little bit about some of the other details. But, yeah, to have projects stall it's really disheartening, and it hurts. I mean, to get so far and then realize you can't go any further because somebody just wasn't as committed as maybe you thought that they were. So I would say spend a lot of time, you know, talking to people before you decide what to do. A lot of the times we go with, you know, we look at a lot of portfolios,
and we're just very discerning. We make it clear what it is that we're looking for, you know, when as you're talking to people, just to make sure, even look in their eyes and see, you know, well, are we agreeing or are you, like, you know, glazing over? You know, those sorts of things. So it's just, you know, you really have to be, especially when you're running your own business, you just have to really take the time to sit down with people and figure out what it, you know, and make it clear, you know, where each of you are going or what, you know, what your intentions are as far as a project is before before getting involved, and be sure to draft up contracts before you work as well. That would be one of my biggest one of my biggest lessons is just make sure you have contracts.
Oh, yes, I agree.
We'll talk offline. If y'all need a lawyer, Tony Long, T-O-N-I, Long. You can find her on Facebook. Get her. Awesome lawyer, entertainment law. So, went to Stanford. Mm.
Yeah.
Do you think that's the reason why, if you look at your body of work, I mean, we didn't get to the producing stuff you do on network TV. Do you think that's probably why, like when you go to Comic-Con or you go to a film place, you somewhat see the same artists up there because they've been the most committed, the most dedicated, and the most respectful of working with other people? Do you get that perception or something totally different?
Go ahead. You know, I think it's true. I do think it's true that, I don't know. I mean, I think it's with all disciplines. Like, even,
exactly,
let's
right.
say, Comic-Con or, let's say, film, where somebody will say, like, somebody like, you know, Tyler Perry, as an example, who sometimes, I mean, he has a lot of people who support him, a lot of awesome fans, but then he also has naysayers. But the thing about people who are disciplined, and not only disciplined, but they work really hard and they turn out a lot of product, there's something to be said for that. And I totally think that's probably why you see a lot of the same people at Comic-Con, because they work hard. They work hard to maintain their audience. You know, they're loyal to their fans, you know, and if they do take a break, they'll say, I'm taking a break, guys, but I'll be back next year with something, you know. And so the fans, you know, will wait for you.
Yeah,
you know,
they
will. If you let them know, and if you just don't, and even if you disappear on them, I mean, you know, like Dave Chappelle, when he disappeared from television, he came back, and everybody, we still were like, oh, where have you been? You know, we missed you or whatever. But I don't know. There's a lot to be said for just working hard, being committed, you know, not faking out on people, and, you know, doing what you say you're going to do, showing up on time, you know. Doing all that stuff. It's just the basic stuff that everybody knows to do. But sometimes, you know, you may, I don't know, things happen and you may falter a little bit. But definitely, yeah, staying committed and doing what you're supposed to do, it definitely pays off, and working hard.
Yeah, consistency is a big part of it. Just like you're saying, Shanae, is that you can see it in a portfolio. That's the thing. Like, you can see it once that resume starts getting built. Like, you can see the work, like, even, like, with filmmakers, you can see they're real, and see the more you do it, the more committed you are, the more consistent you are, the better it's going to get each time, and then that gives you, you know, more opportunity in the future as well. So it opens many doors just to stay consistent and to continue artwork. Or we'll see some portfolios where it's like, man, that person is talented, but, you know, I only see a portfolio with, like, you know, 6 pieces in it. So that's telling me that either, you know, you are, you're either really new, or you'll see those pieces is like 2011, 2010, 2013. It's like, well, where's the rest of it, you know? And then it's like, you know, you can see who's really working, and then you can see it reflected in their art, too, as you see people with, like, lots and lots of work. Which is where we're trying to get with our stuff. I mean, like, if you look into our filmography and you look into our history, you'll see that we've been at it for a long time as well. And some of our friends, or, you know, some of the people we started with might say, you know, you guys, how did that happen or whatever? You know what I'm saying? And it's not like,
right.
I mean, it's not like we're not working. We continue to work and we continue to try and make opportunities happen. And that's just how it is, just staying consistent. We could have dropped off and hey, I'm going to go back and, you know, start motorbike. You know, which is great. I mean, I think it's great to go away and do things and do different things or what have you. But I do think that there's something to be said about trying to stay consistent, and that's where we're trying to have our work reflected in that way as well. But definitely in those portfolios, it's just easy to spot certain things. I mean, and I could talk more about this offline too. But
or part two.
We'll look at each other. We'll be like, yeah, that's great. And that's how one of somebody that we worked with, I mean, had a lot of great work, but it was, you know, inconsistent. And that was mm-hmm. something that we didn't pay too attention to early enough in advance to know that, oh no, this is, you know, this is what happened. So yeah, it's a lot. We have several like learning experiences and several stories that we refer back to help us make better decisions in the future as well. So this, yeah, everything is a learning experience for sure.
And as you said, this, and I'm glad you brought that up. This, the question was actually, as you brought it up, in reference to comics, it's the same, you know, across with film and animation. It seems to be like consistency is the key, and, you know, integrity, as you point out so eloquently.
Yeah.
You guys, I don't know how y'all do it, but, you know, y'all do what you do. Just keep ruling the world. Before we go off in a few minutes here, I want to touch on the network you are working on. Again, people, they were producing for Emmy Award-winning series Top Chef, Project Runway, Conjure Disney's Emmy-winning people, sitcom, W. How'd that come about? And how'd that all come about? It's almost like a fourth area for you ladies that you work in, the creativity.
Should I? Okay, let's see. Should I go into this long? I feel like it's a long story.
Okay, well, yeah, it's all pretty much like post-production.
Yeah.
A lot of it.
I just want to say to anybody that may be listening or anybody who's interested in coming to L.A., I don't know if it's enough to just be an awesome writer. It's not enough to just be an awesome. I mean, it's awesome to be an awesome writer, let me say that. I mean, it's great to, like, know your craft and be amazing. But there's also a lot to be said for being able to get out into a networking environment, meet people and say, I'm so-and-so. I'm a writer, or I'm interested in looking for work, or, you know, that sort of thing. Because I think sometimes with us writers, in particular, like, we kind of create in our little vacuum, and then we're like, oh, you know, when it's time to go looking for work or whatever. But you have to exercise that muscle. You have to get out there. You have to sometimes put yourself in uncomfortable situations. Like, if you're not naturally, like, the conversationalist, just try, like, putting yourself in the position of getting out and shaking hands and meeting people, because that's how, like, I got my first job in television. And I was sort of a shy person. I wasn't even the person who even opened my mouth. It was my friend who I met who turned to somebody who was working as a producer, and she was like, so how would I get a job there? I'm interested in working or whatever. And he gave us contact information. He's like, yeah, I know the human resources person. You can just send your resume over. And so I wrote down the contact information and sent my resume over, and then that was my first job in television. But, I mean, there's just a lot to be said for, like, knowing how to speak up for yourself, to sell yourself, because that's what, you know, that's what this, the industry, to some degree, is about, is, like, meeting people. Because, even now, like, most of our work will come from somebody saying, hey, I'm working on a show. I'm looking for a story producer or whatever. Would you be interested in this job? I mean, and that just comes through relationships. So, I mean, I know that the lifeline is relationships. People, whenever they want to work, you know, I'm looking for a DP. Does anybody know a DP? Or, hey, I'm looking for a writer. And they'll go through their contacts, or they'll call their friend and say, hey, do you know somebody? And if you were at that networking event and you, like, presented yourself, or you, like, spoke up at some point, and somebody says, oh, just so that person remembers you, and they can pass your name along or whatever. So that's how my television start happened. And then I knew somebody who was looking for some people, and I think I told Chanel about it, and Chanel jumped on it, and then she started in working on one of the shows, probably Project Runway. But it definitely, like, it works that way. And we've been able to keep going for a few years just working in television that way. But I would definitely, I think it's important to attend any networking event, and don't be afraid to leave your laptop while you're working on a hot script. If somebody says, hey, there's an event going on, you want to come with me? Don't. I mean, of course, make the time to write and make the time to create, but also make a little time to, you know, to get out there and get amongst people in the town, whatever that town may be. Even if you're in, you know, Indiana and you want to be a screenwriter, or, you know, South Africa, you know, you just get out there. You, however people can find you, even if it's like at a party or just getting your work out there, I think it all helps.
Do you feel, there's something you touched on, do you feel, I know that people look at the, who was the young lady from Juno, Cody Diablo, I think that's her name, from Minnesota or someplace.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think a lot of people put a lot of pressure on themselves if they're in a place like Illinois or Iowa or someplace, they put too much pressure that I have to be in L.A., I have to get there. Do you sometimes feel people do that and it's kind of counterproductive, or how would you give a person advice in that situation? What would be your advice?
It's easy sometimes to get fascinated and, you know, get stars in your eyes and want to come to Los Angeles because you do want to physically be where a lot of things are happening. But I do think there are other ways to get Hollywood to take notice without even leaving, you know, probably your front door sometimes. Because, yeah, I think Cody Diablo didn't. She had her own blog. That's, you know, Tumblrs and all these sort. There's a lot of different ways to get attention and to get people interested. As you can see, we did a lot of, even in Oakland, just if we were to continue there, we probably would have more of a filmography. To be honest, because, you know, we got here and we're still working full-time in television. A lot of our work, you know, and that takes a lot of time. Sometimes you're working 12-hour days, and then when you come home, you don't have, you know, a lot of energy for your own projects. And that's where a lot of people, you know, when they come to Los Angeles, I mean, they'll tell you, a lot of the people that we do work with, they came with intentions of, you know, doing more of their writing or maybe directing and things, and, you know, they got into editing or they just fell into some job where they're, you know, maybe they're even an agent, you know, but it wasn't necessarily, you know, there's a winding role as far as getting from point A to point B to even, you know, point C in Hollywood. So it could be sometimes more beneficial just to stay home and stay focused on your projects, and especially if you're a writer, to build your credits in other ways where you can, you know, you can work on your screenplays and you can also do a great blog or write. I see a lot of people, fan fiction is really a big thing now as well. So you know about this, Saeed?
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I'm very familiar with it. How about you explain it to the audience,
yeah,
for those who are like, who?
Oh, yeah, there's a lot of Twilight-based things going on and, you know, based on existing properties and stories where people just, you know, take the characters and run with them or do things inspired by different things. And I think that's how 50 Shades of Grey actually came about, maybe in a fan fiction sort of a forum or sort of way. But there's lots of different ways. There's several different ways to get attention and to build your own audience, which is probably actually the most important thing to executives now, beyond anything else. Is, do you have, you know, 500,000 Twitter followers, or how many people are actually, you know, on your Facebook, or how much action are you, how much social network action are you drumming up? And that can be, you know, drummed up from Longview, Texas, you know, or wherever you happen to be at. You can definitely reach your goals and do the work and probably be further along than somebody who's waiting tables in Los Angeles for sure.
Right. Oh, the fan fiction. Yeah, we're doing that actually now. Border Clash. We work. But that's about me. This isn't about me. It's about you. So we're gonna stay on you, ladies.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I'm not gonna talk. This is your show. I'm just the moderator.
No, this is your show. Which is definitely is. And we're happy to be here. Whatever direction you want to take it in, we'll just hold on and enjoy the ride.
Hey, well, you know, if you say something, you sing. So if you want to break off some notes right now, feel free. Yeah, I knew she'd get quiet. But for you, ladies, you talked about something while I'm still in the membrane here. Tanya Kersey from the Hollywood Black Film Festival talks about this often, and this comes up at panels, comic books, film, whatever, even business, relationships. Do you feel, I think we've had this conversation, but I wanted to ask you, for the people out there who are not familiar with this, the best way that you would feel, or a good way for people to approach building relationships, would be what, from your point of view?
I think first, building relationships with people who are in your circle, or people that you meet who are like new writers or new directors or whatever your realm is. Like, reaching out to those people, that is your most basic and secure network, because with all of you writing together and working together, like, all this is, you guys will all like matriculate at around the same time. Your friend who you started writing in a writer's group with or whatever may move on to something else, and somebody else may move on to somewhere else, and that could be a resource that you call on later. That's your most, I mean, that's the easiest relationship to make, are people who are just around you and, you know, on your own level. The next thing would be to, like, find somebody who you really, like, seriously take a real interest in, who is maybe, like, a step or a couple steps ahead of you, and reach out to them. Hey, I saw your film at the festival, or, you know, go to film festivals, meet them, shake their hand, let them know that you love them and you love to, like, have coffee with them or something. That's another level. And then you can probably reach out and try to look for a mentor, somebody who may be working in the industry that you would want to work in, and you may have something in common with. Maybe they went to your school, or maybe you guys are both into Doctor Who, or, you know, maybe you're into cosplay, or, like, what, you just find some level that you can really seriously connect with somebody on, and then use that to reach out to them. And, I mean, because there are people, like, you know, people that we came here to L.A. with, you know, we're all now, like, years later, all working in different arenas. And you can, you know, I mean, these are people who knew you back, you know, when you, you know, didn't have $15 in your bank account or whatever, you know. And so, like, these are, like, your real people who really genuinely know you and who you could call on for favors and stuff. So I'm all about, like, you know, making those connections. And don't be, you know, don't always look up, you know, like, look around you. Like, some people come in and like, oh, I want to be like that person on that show or whatever, and that's all I want to surround myself. I mean, it's good to, like, want to surround yourself with working professionals, but some of your most, I mean, the person who will pick up the phone the fastest is probably that person who, you know, you worked with at Starbucks, who was also a writer or whatever. So, I don't know. I mean, I think there's different ways to build your network, and different levels to build it on, and just you should just be aware of those as you're like connecting with people.
You feel, this came up, I'd like to watch a lot of commentary on a lot of video, a lot of film. I just love hearing the commentary, but even the producers or the writers, whatever. And do you ever feel that people make the mistake of looking, they want to make relationships with the person that has the title versus those that do not? I ask this because I was watching Predator 2 last night with Danny Glover on it, and the director or the producer, I always love that one too, the director or the producer, I think it was the producer, he made the comment that about always being nice to people and being kind to people and trying to help people if they're really sincere about getting help, and how he met this gentleman. I think he said the person was waiting tables or came out to L.A., was, you know, was doing the hustle of survival that we all know, and that when they were working on the Predator script and getting the scripts together and the notes together, 6 months later when they were in the U.K., when they came back to L.A. to go to the studio, the executive who walked in was the same kid who was a waiter 6 months earlier.
Wow.
And the guy, and he said he was so happy that he was nice to this guy. And how the waiter was like, hey, do you remember, I think he said he was a waiter. He goes, hey, do you remember me? And they were talking about back then and things like that. And I'm wondering if you think people make that mistake of overlooking the person that doesn't have the title. Do you understand what I'm asking?
Yeah, it's true. It's true. It happens all the time. I mean, I think it happens all the time. And I think to the detriment of relationship building and things like that. There are people who, you know, they'll step over you. Like, literally, I've been in networking situations where somebody is stepping over you, like literally pushing you out of the way, or you're at a party and everybody knows that, you know, oh, that's the person who produced this or they were in that. And so they're stepping over people to get to the person who has already done the work, you know, who already has already built their own connections and things like that. I mean, sometimes it works, you know, and sometimes, you know, you just make everybody angry, especially if you're not, if you're, you know, if you're annoying the person you're trying to get to. So, I mean, I do think that it's tough. I mean, and then there are times when, you know, people have gone all around the room and asked everybody, you know, so what do you do and who are you?
Oh, yeah.
You know, yeah, that sort of thing. And it's like, it's not about who people, you know, what their titles are, because those are ever changing, you know. Mm-hmm. Somebody mm-hmm. who was one title in one day is going to be, you know, maybe in another year or so it's going to change. And does mm-hmm. that change? And if that changes the way you treat that person, then you have to look at your motives and your intention, because it just kind of means that you're not a good person. You know, if because there are people who, you know, they've talked all over you and done all sorts of things, and then they find out you work on a certain show and their whole demeanor changes, you know? Mm-hmm. Or they, you know, they've just, you know, tripped or they've done something, you know, really rude or whatever, and then they find out, oh, you're working on this show? Oh, wow, well, tell me. We must, you know, give me your number. And it's like, what? So people, I mean, it's just a level of genuineness that, you know, some people just don't naturally possess. That they don't naturally possess, you know. So I think it's good to keep those sorts of things in check, you know. Just realize that everybody are human beings, and, you know, roles and things will change. Even there are a lot of people who you know, and I've noticed this a lot in Los Angeles. I'm sure it happens a lot in any other big city, but they'll, it's a zip code sort of thing, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's like,
you know,
if somebody lives in Beverly Hills, or, you know, are you in Santa Monica, or, you know, or if you're in the wrong place, then, you know, mm-hmm. oh, you know, you well, you don't know, you know, or, you know, oh, well, let's move over here and let's continue mm-hmm. to talk, you know. So it's like, you know, those sorts of things. I mean, you just never know. And area codes and zip codes, they change as well. So you just have to really, you know, try to just be on a genuine level and treat
right.
everybody, you know, respectfully.
Yeah,
so, and just keep those things in check, even if you realize, I mean, I don't know if some people, you know, maybe it's just a mechanism that they don't have, or if it's something that you just have to continue to keep in check that as you're networking and sort of, you know, rubbing shoulders with different people. But,
mm-hmm.
Sorry.
Yeah. I know, I totally think it just goes back to connecting with people and just learning how to connect on a really, truly genuine level. Just, mm-hmm. It doesn't matter what somebody's title is. You know, if you're in an event and you guys are having a great conversation, then just allow things to develop naturally, because, I mean, everybody, even if they're not the executive at Fox, I mean, everybody has roles. That person could just be a good friend, you know. I mean, it's just, you know, just
everybody
be,
has a place in the choir.
Genius. Everybody does have a place in the choir. That'll
be the title of our biography, autobiography.
Everybody has a place in the choir. Oh, man, I love that. I love that. In the closing minutes here, I like to rock my top five questions, but I'll probably just do three. And then we weren't able to get the music up, but I do want to ask you about this. I might start with you, ladies. People giving me their top 10 music, their songs, and explain to me why they know about that song. But I won't do it yet, not yet. So here's the first question for you two ladies. If the traditional, if you weren't doing the creative stuff you were doing now, what would you be doing?
Oh, man, probably teaching.
Yeah.
Don't take my answer. Oh, sorry.
Twindom.
Yeah, probably teaching, or then somehow I always felt that I might be doing nursing or something.
Uh-huh.
Because like I grew up just thinking I might want to go into nursing. But, yeah, something like that along those
nurturing.
Lines.
Nurturing.
Being a happy homemaker. Oh, man. Not working, you know.
Yes.
Watching daytime television all day.
Right. Traveling the world.
Here's the next one for you ladies. Top film you've, the last top great film you've seen.
Or good film,
like you'd recommend to somebody. You recommend that they would pay full price, not go download on the torrent.
I think I'd probably say Attack the Block. I don't know if it was the last great film that I saw, but when you just said that, it was just excellent. It was fun. It was adventurous. Set in London. Had a little sci-fi, a little action.
Get the snitch.
A story about some... huh?
Get the snitch. The song that the gang member sings in the weed room. So.
Oh yeah.
That was the film.
I liked World War Z.
That was summer, like a summer blockbuster movie. I would say if you had to go this summer and it's still in the theater, I would say don't sneak in. You could probably pay full price for World War Z. That was the most recent one I've seen.
The one about Oscar Grant.
Oh, Fruitvale Avenue
from our hometown. So yeah, check that one out too.
Yeah, that's a movie I won't see because you know I saw Roots when it first came out. And let me tell you, you know.
Well, yeah, for drama's sake, if you still need a little drama this summer, then yes, most definitely.
Yeah, I might come out of Fruitvale. Looking at folks sideways. So.
No. I tell you that when you walk away with hope. It's very hopeful, even though the subject matter is, you know, it's tough subject matter, but you walk away with a spirit of hope. I love that about what you did with the film. So
we have Fruitvale Avenue, we have World War Z, and we have Attack the Block. Attack the Block. Spike said he loved that play. I think every time I'm writing, particularly sci-fi, I put Attack the Block in. It just has it's just so fresh, that vibe.
Yes, it is.
You know,
I've never seen anything like it, yeah.
It's a movie, it just stood out because I remember I showed it to my law students, you know, particularly my 11th graders, and they've never seen people that look like them with that accent. And first, like, wait, they're English? Like, yeah. But they were so into it. Even some of my Latina students were telling their folks, you know, hey, put this on Netflix. You got to watch this film.
Yeah.
So I love it. Yeah, it's a great film. Fruitvale,
WKBFW. Believe.
Believe, bro. Could be bad peas in there, you know. A great film. We have Fruitvale Avenue. We have World War Z. And we have Attack the Block. So next question for you ladies here is, what artists or creators out there are you that would you recommend people check out? Could be a comic book, could be a screenwriter, could be a film or animation. What creators out there are you recommending people to check out?
Who to check out? Somebody who's been really inspirational to us, from youth to now, is Octavia Butler.
Mm.
Who was a science fiction writer. She passed away a few years ago, but seeing her inspired us to just open our minds and challenge ourselves to tell stories that are just completely unconventional. So I think the fact that Octavia Butler existed is probably the reason why Adopted by Aliens even happened, and she informs a lot of our work. So I'd say Octavia E. Butler.
Right. Yeah, I'd also say for his history's sake as well, I like the work of Jackie Orms. I would recommend that people check out. She was an African-American woman cartoonist, and she was active
in the 30s and 40s. So definitely check out her work if you can, just to, you know, get a little history and also see some great work.
Oh, yeah. We're talking history there. It's interesting with Octavia Butler and Jackie Orms. They're bleeding Philip, you know, K. Dick to, you know, dry with, you know, Blade Runner and Total Recall and things like that. And there seems to be a challenge trying to get any of Octavia Butler's work to the screen. I have an idea. Actually, I have an idea why, and I'll tell y'all offline. But what is your why do you think that would be the reason? Like, she has such a body of work. What do you think? Is there a challenge getting her work to screen, or what do you got? What do you think? And then we'll talk about Miss Jackie also.
With Octavia Butler, you'd have to have with any project, you'd have to have the big names attached. I don't know how recently, were they trying to do Kindred, or do you know if they
Kindred.
Were doing any?
Oh,
yeah.
I think it was My Soul
yeah, it was
Keith,
Kindred.
I think they were trying to do.
Oh, yeah,
yeah,
but
Laura Underwood, I know, was working on My Soul to Keep and some other projects from another writer as well, a science fiction writer. Who's also, we love a lot of her work as well. But I just think it's I don't think that it's impossible to happen, that Octavia Butler's work is going to, you know, come to Korean. I do think that it, you know, it's just going to take a little... probably more campaigning on the part of people who have the rights to her work, and the right people attached to it to really get it to, you know, to go completely. But I think it would be great to see some of her work on screen. I think a great introductory book for anybody is Kindred.
Yeah, I think the other thing is, I just wanted to add the other thing about Octavia Butler is that she tended to write a lot of strong female leads.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, there's just been some recent articles in the press as of in the last couple of weeks about the number of films with women leads, like, dropping several percentages.
Right.
And I just, you know, like, finding that right talent to put in one of Octavia Butler's roles would do a great service to helping it get made, you know. But, I mean, it's just, you know, packaging, you know, talent, director, money, all of that together to get some of this stuff. I'm sure it's going to happen soon. I hope it'll happen in our lifetime, and hopefully we may be responsible for bringing some of Octavia Butler's stories to life. But, I mean, I know because so many people are aware of her work, but I know that something will be coming down the pipeline soon.
Oh, well, that actually leads to my next question. So you both have, you know, Real Republic has just met an investor. We'll say his name is Saeed, and he created a film fund of $30 million for you to produce a film based on Octavia Butler script. Who directs the movie?
Whoa. Who would direct?
Uh-huh. And you have the final say. You say, Saeed, we want this person. Okay, no problem.
I feel like Tim Story is really going in a good direction. I just feel like he has, you know, he's done Fantastic Four. He's done a lot of, you know, great projects. Did he? He started, you know, doing TV stuff, and I mean, I feel like he would be one of the first names on my list, actually. And I don't know who else you would want to have on the list, Sinead.
Probably Ava DuVernay.
Okay.
I mean, there's so many names. Gosh, we'd be here all day, but there's a
that'd be
a
part
lot
two.
Of names to go into. Part two.
Yeah, I would. I think that would be really dope to have like Tim Story on it, because I mean, I know he did Barbershop like back in the day. He recently did Think Like a Man, but he's also done like Fantastic Four and, you know, the couple of movies of those, and I would be really honored.
Go ahead.
Oh, sorry. I thought I was stepping over somebody.
Oh, no, do your thing. Do your thing.
taking you on.
Yeah, but yeah. So, yeah. I mean, I'm sure if we could go on and on. I mean, like, if we had to really come up with a list, we would have, like, a list that included, like, 25 to 50 people. But, yeah, right off the top of the head, I would say Tim Story, Janae Sane, that's Ava DuVernay, who we love. We love her work as well, so.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right. So I don't have to ask the question about who would do the screenplay adaptation, correct?
No.
No, not at all.
So,
and I would even throw our names in the directing for just for good measure.
I understand. Just to make sure it stays true to the story.
Yeah.
I'm with you. I'm definitely with you, ladies. Last question here. It has to do with Miss Jackie Orms. Do you think, let me see, you are teaching a class on creativity. How important would it be for you to educate the fellow creators about the history of the craft, such as a Jackie Orms or somebody? Do you feel, because it seems like a lot of artists these days just don't, whether film or comics, they don't understand the history of the game. How important do you think that would be?
Yeah, it would be extremely important. I mean, and just as we think about, you know, our influences, I mean, they're many, they're varied, and they, you know, they come from different parts of history and they come from different disciplines, and, you know, you have to know the history. I mean, and I hate to say I'm cliche, but, you know, as they taught us as children, there was that little poem or song, you have to know that your history or the world would just be a great mystery to you. So I do think that that's really important, and I think it's good and empowering to know that you're not alone. You know, there's always been people before you and ahead of you who have trailblazed, even if you don't know it. You can always reach back and learn more about them and their work and their craft, and it'll definitely rub off on you in some way and help help inspire your work.
Yeah, I mean,
and
it's like learning
too.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, even if you look back at the, just in film, like how the early guys got started back in the 1910s, you know, you see some of that work and Trip to the Moon. You're like, wow, how did they make all that crazy stuff? They're doing special effects right inside of the camera. I mean, like, we're with, you know, all this stuff that we're doing now, it's like you see all these crazy explosions that took, you know, that thousand teams of thousands to put together, and then you watch a simple film like that and you're still like a century later, you're like, wow, like if I can do this, right, this is something you may be able to pull off.
Right.
You know, with your iPhone. So, I mean,
right,
like, just learn, when you learn the history and you learn, like, the very basics and how those basics can be applied to what you do, you can take from those basics and just, build on top of it. It's just like people say, you're standing on the shoulders of giants. Like,
right,
if you knew everything that a lot of people before you knew, it just makes you that so much better, you know,
mm-hmm,
just because you have that history, you've been informed. It makes you a better artist, I think.
All right, ladies. We are there. We have gotten to the stop. We have to do a part two, and when we do that part two, we're going to lead off with your song list. But, you know, I want to thank you both for coming on air, taking the time from, you know, your time at the Staples Center, doing whatever you're doing over there.
Live from the Staples Center.
And I really appreciate you really, you know, sharing the knowledge with the people out there. So, ladies and gentlemen, I want to give a round of applause to our ladies here.
Yay.
And I want to thank
Thanks,
you, ladies. You're more than welcome.
We appreciate you having us.
Hey, I appreciate you being here. Mm-hmm. So on that note, ladies, a much thank you, and y'all have a great day.
Thank you. Good evening.
All right. Oh, we have 90 seconds left.
Okay, talk to you later.
Gotta go. Hey, I love you guys. Enjoy the closeout music.
Love
you. All right.
Thanks,
bye.
All right.
Love you, bye.
Take care. Love you both. See you later. People, I'm going to tell you, the ladies are they're creating such awesome work. They're creating work that you really have to check out. And they're very inspirational when it comes to the people. And there's nothing more I can really say. So I hope they gave you, I know we had a lot of knowledge spoken on air. I hope it really touched you guys. I hope it motivated you folks. There's a lot of you out there listening. I'm sorry I can't get all your questions, but I think I covered the gist of most of them. And I just want to say that, you know, hey, they're doing the do. Check them out, Real Republic. That's REEL, like film, republic.com. Check out what they're doing and, you know, reach out to them, Twitter, Facebook. You can find them if you're looking for them. So on that note, we're going to close out with a cut here that they wanted to check out. They on their top 10 list here. It's a group called The Story, songs called Kings. In this case, we were talking to two queens today. They are some of the most righteous young ladies that I know. They're awesome. I love them both. And they're just how people should be in the business. Be real, be humble, and just be who you are. All right, Psychic Cassie DeBinga, live and direct, coming from Los Angeles. This is Word on the Street with Shawnee and Chanel Gibbs. People, I am gone. Enjoy the cut. Good night, or good day, or good morning. The group King, Story, twins Paris and Amber Strother. Long time connection with themselves. Another young lady named Anita Bias. Gonna have to get them on the show one day, but again, just they're named the two artists in this group, the three artists of the twins. another set of twins, Paris and Amber Strother. Cool ladies. I believe I'll give you a little bio on them. Their story began in the August afternoon in L.A. when it went to a rehearsal session in Boston, or in April 1986 in Minneapolis. Twins Paris and Amber Strother began their musical journey by listening to favorites of their parents together from the crib, and once they were able to crawl, found the way to the piano. So let's go a little further here. They spent years unknowingly ripening their crafts of writing together until they parted ways and left Minneapolis, with Amber to pursue studies in Chicago and Paris to enroll at music school in Berkeley. I'm sorry, in Boston. I wonder if she went to Berkeley, because Berkeley School of Music is in Boston, my hometown, by the way, outside of Kinshasa. A chance meeting with a young woman with a golden voice and incredible ear changed her life. Los Angeles native Anita Baez had fallen in love with music and art as a young girl, and spent years cultivating her voice, imaginative and vivid songwriting, and creative storytelling. Their Boston encounters stay fresh in their minds, in the minds of both, and when fate brought Paris to California and reunited them years later at a club in L.A., they knew it was the start of something special. So, folks, that's a little touch there, some music. We're going to lead up. We're definitely going to do a part two with the Gibbs sisters. There's so much we have to cover. There's so much knowledge they have to share and so many stories they can tell. And what we're going to do is, in our part two, we're definitely going to lead off with their eclectic music list. It's covered a lot of genres. And again, that one of their suggestions that they loved, that they dug on the list, was King. And this cut we just grooved to the story. So again, I want to thank you guys out there, you ladies out there, for tuning in. Hope some knowledge was shared with you that allow you to open your visions, open your gaze, pursue, don't give up. You see they do so much, but you see they're still able to laugh and still able to enjoy what they do and enjoy what you do. You're doing it. I'm not doing it. They're not doing it. You're doing it. You already know what your vision is. So make that vision real. It's up to you to make it real. It's up to nobody else. But be nice to people. Be kind to people. And just keep flowing. If you have that vision, you see it. No one else sees it. The reason why you see it, because it's your vision. So, folks, Psychic Acid, to bring it live and direct again from Word on the Street with Shani and Chanel Gibbs. People, you have a great day. You be safe. Rule the world. Change the world. And just be who you're supposed to be, because you know what? No one can be you but you. On that note, all I can say is good night. Let's hear a little pray for love on the way out here. Thank you.